Hello, listeners. I decided that since this podcast was about XCOM, that it would be funny to take a dramatic sort of reading of one of the comments about this, because this is what everything on the internet is about this week. So I thought that this comment that I'm about to read pretty much sums up the general feeling, because it starts out with a tirade and ends on something that doesn't really make any sense and is getting the feelings out of him about almost like gaming in general, which is kind of classic. So this is bullshit, especially the part on the official site that talks about taking it to the first person to properly feel the tension and fear. Excuse me, but I didn't need any damn first person to feel tension while invading an alien base in terror from the deep. This is Fallout 3 all over again. Classic franchise through something completely unrelated incoming. I bet it will have a cover system and regenerating health, maybe even super serious Bioshock-styled moral choices like save the zombies from the chrysalids to get Illyrium. But, of course, all the media throughout the world will just keep repeating, haters gonna hate, console shooters are to future.
Hello, and welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast, episode number 219 for April 15th, 2010. On today's show, PC gaming strategy classic XCOM, which we named number 11 on our top 100 games of all time, is now a first-person shooter. We're going to be talking about what that means for the future of the franchise. World of Warcraft has special plans for your tax refund with its most expensive official in-game pet. Oh, I'm sorry, its amounts ever. And bringing up the rear of our podcast is a special interview with Andy Schatz, developer for the Independent Games Festival 2010 winner, Monaco. And we'll also be answering your questions about on indie gaming, if there's going to be a Mirror's Edge 2, and featuring our playlists and more. I'm Evan Lottie, PC Gamer's senior editor, and joining me today are the following podcasteteers: Josh Augustine, PC Gamer associate editor and MMO expert.
Oh, why, thank you. Such a nice title. Long. I like it. We should add a third one to that list, though. Like, headphone extraordinaire.
You are wearing some elaborate headphones, the WoW headset. Are you gonna feature some voices for us today? It's been like three episodes. The people are asking for voices, Josh.
I don't have the drivers installed on this computer, unfortunately. Oh, I can do my best imitation of an orphan voice if you want.
Yeah, save that for later.
Right.
We don't want to disrupt.
If you insist.
maybe after hour two, show me what you got. We also have, of course, Dan Stapleton, PC Gamer's own XCOM expert and reviews editor.
Stretch out my title a little bit. Come on.
You also know more about Star Trek than almost everyone I've ever met.
I'm also very tall.
Yes.
There we go.
And you have a figurine of Diablo clutching Lieutenant Worf.
On that
your
I do.
You do. Terrific. We also have podcast producer Andy Bauman.
Hello.
Hi.
I feel left out of this week from the internet because I did not play XCOM ever. And I regret it so much right now.
There's still time, Andy.
Still time. It's on Steam.
It's all true.
$5.
And Impulse.
You can find it. And joining us as a special guest today, you can hear us interview him at the end of the podcast. Andy Schatz, developer for Monaco, one of our favorite independent games that we saw at GDC this year.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, Andy. It's good to have multiple Andys on the podcast again. All right, so let's get right into it. 2K Games revealed this week. We've sort of known about it for a little bit. We've been keeping it to ourselves, but XCOM is coming back without a hyphen, for example, first of all, which is significant. They're omitting the hyphen. It's just XCOM as a big capitalized acronym that stands for nothing, I don't think.
Wait, is that a thing? The hyphen? You're like concerned about the hyphen?
Some people were. I'm
there was originally a hyphen.
Yeah, it's not canonical anymore. Wow. Anyway, so it's going to be a first-person shooter, and you can read about it at XCOM.com, their first press release and first screenshots. And I guess I just want to get some general thoughts to make a foundation for what this means for the franchise and if we think it's a good idea, if it's a good approach.
Well, I mean, there is a lot of, apocalyptic, crying on the internet right now, but just like there was when they announced that Fallout 3 was going to be a first-person game. Anytime you take a beloved franchise that has a different genre or a different perspective and make any kind of change to it, the initial reaction is going to be, from the fans of the original game is going to be they're, shocked and appalled. But I think, like, particularly in the post Fallout 3 era, I'm actually surprised that so many people are that upset about it, because this developer, which is 2K Marin, they just did BioShock 2, so they've got a lot of irrational heritage in there. They have people who worked on like Freedom Force and a bunch of other irrational games. They've got some good talent there. It could very well be an excellent game. Even if it's not exactly what you were expecting. So even as a ginormous XCOM fanboy myself, this isn't necessarily going to be the game I wanted, for XCOM, but it could still be a great game.
I spent all last night sitting in the corner with a bottle of Jack Daniel's screaming to talk my lungs. And, I woke up this morning vowing to punch whoever decided this in the urethra. I mean, XCOM is a fantastic game, and there's no reason the reason is to make it a broad market game, but why not just make a new game if you're going to do that? Why take a franchise that if you're going to reboot it within the spirit of the original, and make it something that it's not.
Yeah.
That is an excellent point. And, the connection to the original XCOM, between the original XCOM and this one is fairly tenuous. But I mean, when you look at what's already happened to the XCOM franchise since, the last good one, which in my opinion was Terror from the Deep.
Yeah.
I didn't care for Apocalypse, or especially not Interceptor or Enforcer. I mean, it's hard to say, you're bastardizing the franchise when it's already been bastardized.
if you're going to reboot it after this much time, you may as well do it right. It just reeks to me of them picking up a license that they thought would be valuable. It reeks to me of a money decision.
But I mean, do you really think that XCOM commands that much, contemporary respect among gamers? I mean, there hasn't been a good XCOM game in like 15 years.
Yeah, you could have said the same thing about Fallout, right?
Fallout's a little more recent.
Yeah, I guess.
A little bit recent.
It's definitely a challenging situation. I mean, I think if I were 2K, I'm sort of imagining what they're thinking. It's easier to make an alien game if they decide they want to make an alien first-person shooter and use an existing name where they know they have some base of fans that are going to buy it no matter what, right? And I'm definitely one of them. Dan, you probably count yourself as one of them. Have that base of fans to go for, but I just think that's easier than launching with a new name, starting a new IP. We still don't have a sense of like the setting that the game will be based in. We've sort of seen, based on the official Xbox magazine covers that were revealed on GamesRadar earlier this week, that might be a game that's sort of set in the 50s era. It mentions that you're going to be an FBI agent tasked with identifying and eliminating the growing threat of aliens. So it might have like a Men in Black type of vibe or something along those lines. I think maybe what I'm most concerned about is, and it's definitely, we're definitely right to bring in sort of our former feelings about Fallout 3. The negative response people had to, as you mentioned, Fallout 3 being a first-person game. But what about XCOM's heritage? Can they preserve in a first-person experience the squad-based aspect of it? Is there going to be sort of like a between mission planning mode where you're allocating resources and managing a base? What could that look like? Do we think? Well, speculates.
Can I ask a question that may speak to my naivete on the whole XCOM thing? Does the boxy face chap? What does that mean? Is that significant that he's all like deconstructing into boxes? Is that like a boner inducing screenshot for you, or like what does that mean to the XCOM?
It has nothing to do with XCOM past.
Okay. I thought I was just like missing out. I was like, oh, cool. Guy's disintegrating. Does that mean anything?
No.
All right.
I mean, there's a billion different ways you could take the XCOM franchise that would be interesting reboots on the idea of tactical strategy, but and especially on the PC, strategy game is not entirely dead. I mean, you look at StarCraft 2, and that thing's going to be a monster.
Definitely. So, but turn-based strategy, though. I mean, there's pretty much only one really successful turn-based strategy franchise right now, and that's Civilization.
I would be even okay if XCOM turned into a real-time strategy game. You know, that's fine. If it's still got sort of that RPG, strategy-esque element, when I played the original XCOM, I still had the best ending for me of any game I've ever played. Cause my character, you know, he ran into that alien base, and he ran out of ammo just before he could shoot the brain. And I tried to throw the gun at the brain, but it did nothing. Right. And then two aliens came in behind me, but their guns were on auto. And the first shot took my last guy down. His name was Chuck Bryant. The first shot took him down, and the second and third shots went straight over his head and hit the brain and destroyed it. And of course, the cutscene afterwards shows my guy running out. You know, and that sort of emergent gameplay, there's no way that's going to exist in a first-person shooter. It's going to be a story-based, you know, corridor. Well, I don't know. I can't really say. They made a bad decision with the way they described it in their announcement. There probably is more to it than this. But yeah, it just seems like there's ways to, you know, even commercially viable ways to preserve the heritage beyond making it just a first-person shooter.
It doesn't feel at all like a money grab to me. Getting back to that, but it's just I think that they are a little bit more interested in preserving some of the elements of XCOM. Just like, you know, Fallout 3 did preserve a lot of Fallout 1 and 2 in that it carried over a lot of the atmosphere. And for me, with XCOM, one of the things that made it so great was the atmosphere. Even with the basic graphics and basic sound, it managed to creep you out. When you're exploring a UFO that's, you know, and there's an alien behind around the next corner. I mean, it's definitely possible to do that in a first-person shooter. I mean, you won't have the same strategic elements.
I mean, can't you transfer a lot of those strategic elements over into an FPS as well? Like, the research tech trees and kind of, you could even do base building in between missions and kind of like, these are where alien ships are landing on the planet. You know, which one do you want to take first? Where do you want to build these bases? I mean, you could do that in between sessions on the FPS.
That would be awesome. You should make that game.
That would be a serious omission if they didn't. I guess I'd mention in context right here, we do know like Jagged Alliance 3, for example, a game of the same ilk, some of the same mechanics and turn-based and management and things like that, is going to be coming in 2011 in a form similar to its original. So that's heartening at the very least. But do we think it'll be multiplayer? I'm curious about that.
But you're talking about XCOM again?
XCOM, yeah.
That's hard to say. I mean, it's too early.
If you had to guess.
I mean, given that they added, I'm basing this entirely on the fact that they added multiplayer to BioShock, I would say yes.
What's 2K Marin done in the past?
BioShock 2.
Okay.
Although 2K Marin is now now encompasses what used to be Irrational Australia. Right. So when those guys did like Freedom Force.
Right. I actually interviewed with those guys like 10 years ago and got turned down.
Really?
Yeah, they were wrong.
Yeah, I don't know. I could kind of like it to stay single player. I think kind of if you had kind of your squad with you that you could kind of issue commands and stuff, that would add a layer of strategy to it rather than just kind of like co-op or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, it's certainly hard to speculate too much. They did release one teaser screenshot. Dan, remind me of the alien weapon that's featured in that screenshot.
Remind you of it? I mean, I don't know what that is.
Oh, you don't know? I thought it was based on an existing thing. Sorry.
No, nothing in that screenshot resembles anything from a previous XCOM game.
Oh, that's sort of frightening. Because we were saying earlier this week, it's sort of an interesting screenshot to use as your reveal. It's this sort of circular ring in the air, is presumably like an alien weapon, shooting down into a street. There's a car in the street and a guy being disintegrated. And the weapon looks so low poly. It's kind of strange. It doesn't really sell us on the visual look of the game, the visual feel at all.
Well, and everything else in the screenshot is very high detail. It's got a lot of post-processing going on there. It's, and like the very cool disintegration effect.
Laser donut.
You have the laser donut that appears as if it's something that was made in a basic 3D editor, low poly looking. It looks like it's untextured even. So But you know, from what I have seen elsewhere, I can't say that that is intentional. You know, I think they did make a mistake by making that their first reveal, because I think that showing something like that in motion is really the only way to really convey what it's going to look like in the game. So I think they should have put that on in a trailer rather than a video, or rather than a screenshot. And there are other creatures that they could have shown in their first screenshot that would have looked cool.
Yeah, some of the creatures would have elicited some excitement, I think. But yeah, not really too much to get enthused about happening here. It does. I mean, I don't know. For some reason, like the granularity of like the disintegration effect definitely reminds me of the death animations in Fallout 3 a little bit. So there's another Fallout connection.
I still kind of hope, and you know, there is a hope in me still for an XCOM strategy revival. I mean, whether it's actually XCOM, you know, branded, or it's, you know, a good clone. I mean, it's really astonishing to me how nobody has been able to clone what is, you know, the gameplay of the original XCOM, considering it's like right there. I mean, it's right there for you to copy. You know, it can't be that hard to mess it up, you know, to get it right. And yet there have been numerous like smaller games that have tried to do it and just missed by a mile. The most recent one was a couple of years ago. It was like it came out of Russia, I believe, and it was called UFO Invasion or something like that. And it was a blatant XCOM clone, but they changed like a bunch of stuff. Like for one thing, they didn't set it on Earth. They set it on just random alien planet, which, you know, right there disconnects you from it. You know, there's no grounding in reality. They made your squads impossible to kill. Like your people just did not die. They would get wounded, but they didn't die, which, you know, removes a lot of the element of danger of it. The interface was not the step up it should have been. The graphics were still partially 2D. It's just like, if you're going to update it. But yeah. So I'm still longing for somebody to do something like that. And, you know, just update it with, you know, semi-modern graphics, make it very moddable, so that people can add in their own gear and aliens and whatever. And just, I would die happy if somebody could do that.
I mean, I hope I'm not sounding too naive or presumptuous. It seems like the perfect fit for a browser-based, or like even like a Facebook game, just something it doesn't take a lot of, you know, graphical mastery. Just put the pieces in there. It's turn-based. It doesn't require a lot of inputs. I just need a mouse. You know, if you want to do a microtransaction business model, I wouldn't care to buy items and new soldiers and whatever.
Yeah,
like,
but the way that the industry is set up, it's you know, you build a game that your studio is capable of making. And if that particular studio had the license, they're looking at how they can minimize the cost of creating the game and maximize the profit of the game. And if, you know, basically what they're going to do is they're going to take existing technology or existing expertise. It's not necessarily existing technology, but it's certainly existing expertise and tweak it from that basis. Which is why, you know, I don't know. Even a game like BioShock really isn't all that RPG. It's really just an FPS with some, you know, modifiers cast in every now and then.
I definitely get what you're saying along those lines in terms of, okay, you know, 2K Marin and other offices within 2K and studios within 2K, we have 3D animators, we have 3D weapon designers, we have,
a turn-based game would be 3D as well, but...
Well, yeah, no, that is true.
Yeah. But in terms of gameplay design, I think is the area where you really need that expertise. And do you think that the reason we don't see more of these games is that there aren't a whole lot of like experts in turn-based design anymore, just because of, you know, there haven't been a lot of turn-based games made in the last, you know, decade?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. And I think that if you look at, you know, how much of the industry relies on two or three game engines, those types, you know, when you deal with a game engine, there are certain things that are very easy to do and certain things that are very difficult to do. And that's why you look at a game like Red Faction, and there aren't a lot of games with destructible environments, because that's not something that sort of fits in cleanly into the existing, you know, top three game engines out there. And, you know, whether or not you think that's a good game, it's still pretty amazing, the things that they're doing with their destructible environments. And I think that when you know, the games that really break new ground typically are built on, engines that are built from the ground up, because these game, the engines are so monolithic that it's like you end up sort of being forced to create a certain type of game because that's what the engine's been created to do.
Right, it's hard to break the mold.
Yeah. And I also think within publishers, you know, as game development budgets have risen to mirror movies, there is sort of emerging some of that skepticism, and that, like, the green lighting process has sort of mirrored movies in some ways, and in the way developers think about it, right? You know, what's popular right now? You know, are aliens popular? Are first-person shooters popular? Yes. Is multiplayer popular? Yes. Are turn-based strategy games popular? Are they selling well right now? I don't know. There's not that many of them out there. It's sort of the same reason, like, you think about why mech games sort of dropped off the face of the earth a few years ago. All right, so does anybody else have any general comments on XCOM, what we would like to see, like a very ideal scenario within a first-person situation?
In the first person? It's just kind of a wait-and-see kind of thing. Just because there is so little information out there, we don't really know what they're going to be doing with it. So
I'll tell you what I'd like to see. I'd like to see RPG Left 4 Dead. So you know, retain some of that squad based stuff. And I mean, this is just, you know, spitwatting here, but retain some of that role playing and you know, character customization, retain the squad based stuff, and retain some of the strategy that's involved there. And that to me would feel like a true sort of reinterpretation of XCOM into a first person universe.
So you think turn-based with an FPS? I mean, that just seems really boring to me, because you can't look at it from, like, up above.
No. I wasn't saying turn-based. I was saying, if they're assuming they're going with a real-time first-person perspective, then make it like a Left 4 Dead, where you've got, you know, classes and character customization and things like that. But you end up with sort of the strategic decisions about who goes where, you know, and who's covering what corners and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. So a tactical kind of thing, along the lines of another irrational game, SWAT.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, except not with freaking ass complicated controls.
I tell you what, I love to see. I mean, any kind of open mission system where you're sitting in a base for an amount of time, and you have there's an alert and you have to rush off to a level, and that level sort of has enemies that are placed not randomly, but you know based on what you're encountering. So in other words, like a non-linear mission structure. And, I guess a VAT system, we're talking about, you know, real time versus turn based, that might be an alternative. I don't know if that's something they'll pursue, sort of pausable, aimable, combat. That may be a nice alternative. I don't know if they can do it without infringing on any copyrights.
Well, and you see that in Mass Effect as well.
What do you mean? Like a pausable.
You can pause and give orders to your squad and aim.
Right, I mean, I guess in terms of, like, targeting individual body parts and things like that.
Well, that was never really a part of XCOM, but although you could receive damage to specific parts of squad members and you'd go in and heal their wounds, but there was no targeting of individual parts.
I want a mini game like Operation for healing their wounds, where it's like, no, their left knee is ruined. Touch the side.
Yeah. Terrific. Well, I think our general feeling overall, you know, as much as, like, we'd obviously love to see it in its original form or in an upgraded form. It is nice to see the name XCOM in a relevant way again, even if they do something wrong with it or something we're unhappy with. We do have high hopes for it. It's in pretty good hands, so we'll keep you guys abreast of what's up with that. Hope to see a trailer or something in a month or so, I'd imagine, at the very least.
And we do have a story on it in our July issue.
Yes, we do. So that'll be reaching you in very deceptively in mid to late May. You'll be seeing that on shelves or in your mailbox. A nice little feature there about XCOM. All right, so for our next topic, I wanted to toss it over to Josh. What World of Warcraft is more and more these days, after my money, even though their subscriber base is allegedly sort of plateauing, not not really boosting up. I'm sure it will when Cataclysm comes out. There'll be some people jumping back into it again. But somebody wants, you know, I'm sort of presenting this as a layman, Josh. So it's correct me, like if this is a ridiculous situation or not in the context of WoW, but for a horse made of stars, which, you know, again, is a horse made of stars. You can take that as you will. Someone's asking me to pay $25 for this horse. Why?
Because you can show off in the capital city. It's a really unfortunate situation, I think. I mean, when you think about $25, like, you right now you can buy Wrath of Lich King for $29. So for, like, 1/1000th of the amount of content, you can buy this mount. It's just really a bummer because killing the Lich King is a really big deal right now. It's like the biggest boss. Everyone's fighting to get it down. And the people that get it, I believe the mount is called Invincible. And it's this really cool flying horse mount that looks very similar to this, but not made out of stars. And the star effect, you know, it's stars, you know, but it does look pretty cool in game. It's very flashy. Everyone will notice you. And so it's like people that pay $25 in this store look a lot cooler than the people who have killed Arthas for the first time ever. I mean, it's disappointing to say the least. Cause pets for $10, I mean, that's already a bit much, but $25, that's 2 months of your WoW subscription for this one horse.
But how much of that goes to charity, Josh?
Zero.
Really?
Unless I didn't see anything about charity on this one. They did charity on one of the pets for 2 months, and that was all that I've seen.
Hey, if it's that cool, then it's probably a good thing it's $25. There'll be less of them around.
That's true. Actually, WoW Insider was reporting today. I didn't see the actual numbers, but they did the calculations and said that based on the queue, the amount of people that, because when you're waiting to buy it, it tells you how many people are in front of you. Based on the queue that they had been getting from their readers all day, Blizzard was taking in about $500,000 an hour for the first couple hours.
God, yes.
Yeah, so there's going to be a lot of these.
So let me get this straight. It's a digital item, and it's $25, and you still have to wait in line? How does that work?
It's because there's 12 million people playing this game. It's insane.
They should make a horse made out of iPads.
Yeah.
like Pegasus iPad wings.
Yeah. It just tells you how much WoW players love this game. I mean, that as ridiculous as it is, $25 for a one mount, there's still tons and tons of people that want to pay it. And I mean, Blizzard wouldn't have made this if they couldn't have charged for it. There's that argument. So it wouldn't have existed. So I mean, this is a way for more content in the game that people want. Like if this had gone up for $25 and it would just sit there and there's maybe 10 people that bought it, you know, or something ridiculously low like that, then, you know, I would be willing to criticize it much harsher, but it's obvious supply and demand. Their players want this, and they're willing to pay $25 for it. I'm not one of those people, and I don't know anybody that is, hopefully. But it's,
so you're saying did this just to see like what kind of pricing they could do for an in-game, you know, usable item like this?
Oh, yeah. It's got to be. They'll probably just keep bumping it up a little bit. They'll make it flashier each time, maybe do something a little more, because this is the first mount. And so they bump it up and just see, like, okay, what do they do if we do this? And obviously, it's a big success. You know, maybe they'll try 29 next time.
Yeah, think about it this way. I mean, a lot of they've had a lot of exclusive pets that you can only get by going to BlizzCon. And the price to go to BlizzCon is $100. So I admit, this is a bargain.
You're right. I mean, this sounds a lot
like
a
map. Minus the whole you don't get BlizzCon.
And it's made out of BlizzCon stars, guys.
Because it's a constellation horse, yeah.
So, but, I mean, all things considered, though, I mean, it doesn't enhance anybody's stats. Or it doesn't make you go faster or anything like that. It only, like you were saying, it only goes as fast as your fastest existing mount. So, I mean, is it a bad thing to have things like that in game? As long as there's still a wide variety of things you can get access to in the game without paying extra, to have, you know, even more visual variety of people with their different mounts flying around. I mean, it would look, it seems like it would enhance the game for everybody, even those who aren't paying, to have a wide variety of things. You know, it makes you feel more unique if not everybody is flying on the same mount.
I honestly think it would be awesome if they would put out $1,000 mount, just so you could, like, if you saw that some guy with $1,000 mount, you'd be like, whoa, I just saw that freaking, you know, toad made out of genitalia.
It should
be a
city that you fly around in.
With 20-inch rims, and they're spinning. They have lances on the side and their own
cannons.
That
would increase my enjoyment of the game, to see someone riding around $1,000 mount, so why not?
Yeah, I should have clarified earlier. This is definitely a good thing. I don't think this is wrong or evil or anything on Blizzard's part, because people want to buy this. It does. It's added content in the game that wouldn't have been there otherwise. It's great. I just think it's kind of silly that people are willing to pay $25. So I'm a little more critical of the people that are buying this than Blizzard, because this is, it's pretty in the game. Like Dan said, you know, will enhance the experience for everyone. You don't have to buy it. Doesn't give them an edge of any kind. It's just, it's surprising that people, so many people are willing to pay $25 for this. I don't, I need to find a job that pays more.
I mean, this reminds me of what just happened with Modern Warfare 2. I mean, there's people that are so into those games that are willing to purchase more content for those games. And if the price is right, enough people are going to buy it. And it's like, just to think about how much money that they're pulling in is just sickening almost. You're just like, wow. But then again, like I spend money on stupid crap all the time that's way overpriced. So.
Like food and medicine.
No, I mean, it's like whatever you're really into, you know, like, so camera gear is like ridiculously overpriced for what you're getting. You're getting like some plastic pieces of crap for like $300 and you're like, oh yes, give me some shoulder mounts or something. Like, oh my God, it's ridiculous.
Crazy. So Josh, like you're saying, you're encouraging people not to pick this up. And as part of that, I asked you to put together a small package of Steam games that would, you know, so we could sort of compare the value of what $25 can get you somewhere online.
Yeah, and kind of the spirit of free market open competition, I've compiled a list for you to select a few games from. For $5, Zombie Driver, because it's tough to find a $5 game. Zombie Driver, an excellent game, so I recommend that. But then you still got
XCOM.
And XCOM, yes, I apologize, yes. And if you haven't played XCOM, which you should have by now, Andy, this is for you. XCOM, $5. Freedom Force is also $5. So you got $20 left over from not buying this mount. You can pick two from this list of games I'm going to rattle off right now. Plainsight, Audio Surf, Guild Wars Platinum, which includes the original and the first expansion, Secret of Monkey Island Special Edition, Rome Total War, Braid, Peggle Deluxe, Garry's Mod, Plants vs. Zombies, and Psychonauts. I mean, any two of those games plus Zombie Driver is worth infinitely more than this mount.
Are any of those games made out of stars?
Damn it.
You have me there. Secret of Monkey Island has stars in the background?
Yeah, they're sort of like artificial.
Yeah. Garry's Mod, you might be able to make something out of stars.
Does not contain real stars.
So yeah, I mean, if you've got money to burn, I mean, the mount looks cool. I will say, you know, as much as we're kind of joking about it, it's made of stars. It does look cool. It's going to look flashy in game. People are going to turn around and take a second glance at you. If you've got money to burn, that's great. But if you don't already own two of those games on that list, I recommend you definitely put your money there first. And I mean, Guild Wars Platinum. I mean, you get an entire MMO. There's no monthly fee for the price of this one pet.
Yeah. It does act as a nice reminder of the ridiculous sales we're privy to on the PC that console folk often are not. So cool. Thanks for sharing that with us, Josh, and this tale of conspicuous consumption. Let's transition into this week's cache of awesome questions from our listeners and readers.
Cache. I like that. Isn't it cache?
Not if you're cool. I liked putting the accent.
Hi, PC Gamer. I just got the 200th issue, and all I got to say is, wow. It is a fantastic remake. Under Logan's leadership and all your hard work, it's just been a much better magazine. Also, I wanted to point out your credibility when it came to the Assassin's Creed 2, your review of it, that, yeah, it is an excellent game, and don't buy it. I like your integrity there. And I was so impressed that I went and purchased a second subscription. My suggestion is, could you put a box in there for a subscription for a friend? Because I actually made a subscription for my office for myself, but I didn't see any checkbox to gift your magazine. And I'm sure that a few people would be interested in doing so. So if you could just please update your website to include that little feature to gift the magazine, I would appreciate it. Keep up the great work. I love you guys all. And
His love was too long.
Yeah.
He had to be caught.
his love was too great. Yeah. So the good news is we actually definitely and have for a while, there is a gift subscription option on our website if you would choose to do that for a significant other or PC gaming friend or rival. If you head on over to PCGamer.com, top right corner says gift subscriptions. You can throw some magazine at your friend. But yeah, thanks for the comments on the 200th issue. Glad you liked our stance on Assassin's Creed 2. If anybody else has any comments about that, please share them with us. Next question, or comments, or adoration.
Hey, PC Gamer. It's Dave Shea calling again from Minnesota. I just wanted to say, first of all, fantastic job on the 200th issue. It's absolutely amazing, and the screenshot of Diablo is probably the coolest I've ever seen. My question is, recently, the two of the greatest games that I have played in years have been Dead Space, with its sort of aliens meets the thing, and Mirror's Edge. I just really love Mirror's Edge. It was amazing how it actually used color, and was not a shooter. It just really was fantastic. So I want to know, do you know anything about the sequels coming up? Are they being made? And if they're being made, are they being made for the PC? Thanks so much. Keep up the great work. Bye.
I'm not sure if we know. I mean, Mirror's Edge 2, excuse me, certainly has not been confirmed or announced or anything like that or teased. But I guess just speculating, do you guys think a Mirror's Edge 2 will happen?
Almost certainly. I mean, I think it did sold pretty well as far as I know. And they're making like Mirror's Edge games for the iPad now. So I think they're planning to keep that franchise going.
It's just creatively in terms of like, I think it ran on Unreal, but the tech and the art and the story, like that represents a certain investment to EA, and you know, EA doesn't shy away from sequels. But again, you know, we're happy to see them roll out these two new IPs. Dead Space 2, it's sort of an interesting situation. It got announced, and sort of the first comment was, well, it's not going to be on PC, or it's under consideration. A PC SKU is under consideration. And kind of an interesting response that came out of that, Jeff Green, who, you know, formerly of CGW, he, on his Twitter, he commented shortly after that announcement, that definitely clashes with my info. I'm paraphrasing here a little bit. And then he sort of corrected himself, oh, right, It is under, a PC version of Dead Space 2 is under consideration. It's not totally confirmed yet. So that sort of leads us to believe, sort of reading that information, that it's planned or maybe happening or just hasn't, you know, all the details haven't been worked out yet. And for whatever reason, they're not comfortable confirming that.
I don't know. It sounds like, you know, Jeff kind of had heard internally that it was planning. It was in the works. And then for whatever reason, they didn't want to announce it just yet. And it could be, you know, they didn't want to commit to it in case there was some kind of like development delay or something that would cost them more to, you know, they had to allocate the budget differently. But you know, it's probably like 75-80% likely to happen.
Yeah, I think that's very reasonable. There's no reason for them not to. It did well on PC. It was a fun game on PC. It played well. So
Once you fix the V-Sync problem, yeah.
Yes, indeed. All right, next question.
I wanted to say something about Mirror's Edge. I think if it doesn't come back in its form of itself, like reincarnated or Mirror's Edge 2, I think it was such a great example of how tightly you can control something, like in sort of a new space, that maybe it'll translate well into like a new class for Battlefield 3. Like maybe there'll be a parkour class or something. Cool. That would be my dream.
That would be some impressive level design to design something for both like the Mirror's Edge style parkour and for Battlefield combat.
Yeah. Dude, make it happen.
I mean, DICE has got to be working on the most games currently in the world right now. I've got to imagine. Let's see. You know, if they're doing a Mirror's Edge 2.
If they're doing Battlefield 3.
If they're doing Battlefield 3, which, you know, come on. It's
hopefully.
Battlefield 3.
Yeah.
Bad Company 2, they just finished. They're probably working on DLC and stuff for that and new maps.
Battlefield 1943 for PC.
Battlefield Heroes, so that's like five or six, including some not confirmed ones. The Medal of Honor multiplayer.
Oh, that's right. Holy
God
crap.
Damn. Wow. Ridiculous.
So maybe that'll have some parkour in it.
Yeah. they should just outsource the next Mirror's Edge to the guy that made Cannonballs. Make it 2D and just put faith in there.
Well, they did do that.
It's kind of what there was the iPad one.
There's like a flash version, right? Yeah.
Well, the iPad version is like that.
Yeah.
I don't have an iPad.
I can't speak to that. And I promised we wouldn't talk about the iPad to somebody. So
never again.
Yeah.
PC gamer Justin from Wisconsin here. My question is about indie style games and what you guys think of them. Me, I've grown to liking indie games almost more than some of the more mainstream games. They're usually pretty cheap on Steam and have a fun, quirky theme to them, like the newer Plainsight or the upcoming Misadventures of PB Winterbottom. But what are your guys' thoughts on them? Do you play many indie games? And if you do, what are some of your favorites? Thanks, and keep up the great work with the podcast.
I don't want to divert from this guy's question too much, but do you guys think... It's sort of like... People always talk about indie music around me, and it sort of bugs me because I think it's sort of a fake label. It feels like it's the feeling of liking a product that's independent that gives it some sort of romance or makes you feel like you're a smart consumer. Do we like the label independent development? Does that annoy anybody at all? Should we just think about games as games and not really think about that context too much? Maybe I'm off my rocker here.
I think in games it does give important context because it kind of gives you kind of a perspective going in of like the level of production to expect. Not so much how much fun the game is going to be, because certainly there are a lot of independent games that are more fun than a lot of, big studio produced games, which, have a tendency to suck sometimes. But going in and, you know, if you've got like Battlefield Bad Company 2 next to, World of Goo, there's a little bit of a different mentality when you go into one of those games.
Yeah, of course. I think like maybe this is a conversation I remember us having. I don't remember what we end up with, but is indie a genre?
I don't think so.
There's actually a huge argument about this within the independent game development scene, and it's a weird argument with the devs because indie means two different things to devs. We like to define ourselves as indie based upon our development model, meaning like, do we take money from a big publisher? Does someone else have control over the designs that we create? But when you look at the word indie from a consumer perspective, it has a different meaning. And I think that actually it does have, it certainly has some meaning within the English language, and it has some, ideas that go along with it that maybe the production values aren't as big, that it's going to probably be cheaper, that it's probably going to be more different from your standard games, than a sort of a typical AAA game. And so I definitely think there's meaning from a consumer perspective. You hear the word indie and it means something to you. There's real meaning behind it. And it may be vague, but there's something real there.
But it's not a genre in the way that shooters are a genre or sort of real time strategy is a genre or RPGs are a genre. It is a category or a label that can be applied to games, but it's not a genre.
Yeah, and I think like the only reason we might feel that way to some extent is because two dimensional games are popular within independent game the independent game scene. They're easy to make. They're lightweight in that way.
But even within two-dimensional games, you have multiple genres in there, and you can have a 2D RTS and a 2D or a 2D side scroller.
Right. Yeah. I mean, just in terms of there being certain connotations sometimes for people, games don't release in a vacuum. That's kind of one of my philosophies. So, yeah, glad to have your comments on there, guys. And I guess are there any specific indie games we're playing right now?
I've been playing Love actually for review.
Oh my God.
Nice, dude.
Yes.
Yes, that's been a lot of fun. I'm really enjoying that. And that's the sort of thing, like, I don't know. I don't know if there's such thing as like a sub or like a half a genre, because it's like a genre that applies to all other genres, where it's like you take a shooter or you take an RTS and then you make it an independent one of those. And it's sort of an independent MMO adventure FPS kind of hybrid. It's been
So it's genre then. That's what you're saying.
And the visuals are amazing.
Yeah.
Yes, they really are. It's incredible. It's like looking at a canvas that's being painted and being changed while you play. It's really nice.
Very cool. Yeah, tell us more about that in your playlist. Yeah. And I think we got time for one more quick question.
Hi, this is Lance from Bethlehem, PA. I've been listening for a long time and still continuing to listen even though I'm not much of a PC gamer anymore, more of a 360 guy.
What?
Anyway, you guys had a conversation last week about collector's editions and you were discussing Total Annihilation and Jeremy Soule. I just wanted to point out that a lot of Jeremy Soule's soundtracks are available on Direct Song. I'm a big fan too, so it's pretty cool to be able to get those there. And in addition, wanted to say thanks for pointing out the fact that Prey was written by Gary Whitta and also happens to have a Jeremy Soule soundtrack, so even better. I'm looking forward to going back and checking that out. Thanks.
That is true, and there are a lot of Jeremy Soule soundtracks available for sale. Unfortunately, Total Annihilation is not one of them.
So he referenced directsong.com. I'm not sure who this is run by exactly, if it's, but it does seem to feature a handful of mostly Jeremy Soule stuff. There's Elder Scrolls III, Morrowind, Oblivion, Guild Wars soundtracks on here. Prey, Supcom, the original.
I was talking to Jeremy Soule about potentially getting some of his Total Annihilation tracks to put on our disc a while back when we did a story about like our favorite classic gaming soundtracks, and Total Annihilation was one of mine, and I wanted to get some of those tracks on there, but he doesn't own the rights to those, or he doesn't have any rights to them. Whereas, like, since then, he retains the rights to do things like that with his music. But I guess Atari owns all the rights to that now. And Atari wasn't going to play ball with us. So
thanks again for your questions this week, guys. If you want to send us some for our next podcast, you can email us, as always, at pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. Throw us a MP3. Don't type it out. We don't want to talk. You don't want to voice out your question. That's always awkward. you can also call us if you have a cellular phone. That's 877-404-1337, extension 724. Let's transition to my favorite segment of the podcast, playlists. Josh Augustine, you're playing Love, and I saw it at your apartment. And
it's true.
If I let you loose here, you will probably go on for 20 minutes about it. So
yes.
Do the best you can to give people a concentrated vision of what Love is and what the experience of playing it is actually like.
Yeah.
Tell us, Josh, what is Love?
Yeah, what
baby,
is Love?
Maybe don't hurt
and,
me, Josh.
And why did Evan go to your apartment and see Love?
My apartment is just filled with Love. Me and Eric, we got Love all over the place.
Yeah.
First of all, you need to be very careful when talking about Love. Because it's like, if you're talking with like your girlfriend or something, you're like, oh no, I'm just kind of getting bored with Love. It's just not holding my interest anymore. Just don't know if I want it anymore.
And the captions just write themselves, don't they?
Yeah. And just talking with Dan, like, I forgot to mention that I was talking about the game Love, and I just sent him a message that was like, oh man, you know, I'm really having fun with Love right now.
Yeah, and he didn't capitalize the name of the game either.
So Dan just, like, he didn't respond for like 2 minutes, and then I realized, I was like, oh wait, I better, you know, clarify that I'm not asking him for like love advice or something.
Well, you see, Josh.
But the basic idea of Love is that there's this world that is out there, and it's populated with kind of NPCs and editable terrain. It's procedurally generated. And you need to create a settlement and kind of eke out a living in this world. And you're working collaboratively with whoever happens to be online.
Josh, sorry to interrupt, but like one thing I've and everything I've seen about Love, I haven't actually seen a whole lot of screenshots yet or anything, but is it third person or first person or what?
It's first person.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And the player models look crazy. And I really want to know what my player looks like, but I can't see it. But yeah, the player models are like floating pile of rags with dreadlocks or spikes. They just look really weird, but it fits in well with the aesthetic that is just, it's extremely painterly. Like instead of, you know, like a tree branch, it'll just be like a stroke of brown as if someone had grabbed like a paintbrush and just whipped it across your screen. And so you create these settlements by, just putting a stone down, and it's like a monolith stone. It creates this, settlement. Then you have to explore the world and find tokens that you can bring back to your settlement and put down to create vending machines that basically give you new tools to use. Like, and there's a tool to raise or lower terrain. There's a tool that's a blaster if you run into enemies. There's a tool that lets you set up a radio so that you can communicate with each other on different frequencies or listen in on enemy frequencies. There's also a tool that's scuba diving equipment that lets you dive underwater, and a tool that the config tool. All around the world is like power wells or cable relays, which are kind of like hookups for zip lines. And using this config tool, you can go around and connect them in different ways, like steal power and bring it back to your base, or set up a cable relay to take you across a chasm that you couldn't cross otherwise. Just the amount of kind of all the problems are solved with your creativity. And that's what I really like. It's not like you need to shoot perfectly. The AI isn't great. You don't need to shoot perfectly. You don't need to jump a certain way. You encounter obstacles just by exploring this world, and you're given tools to solve it. And you just have to figure out how to make it work. You know, do I want to sneak into their base and steal power and bring it back to my base? Do I want to go try and find a natural power deposit somewhere out there? You know, I need to get over there. Do I want to do the cable relay, or do I want to raise the ground and try and build a cliff to get up there? It's very almost inspiring, where it's like that sense of wanderlust that you get in MMOs is just heightened to such a degree that you just want to go exploring. There's no map. You don't know where you're going, but it doesn't matter because you're going out there and just exploring this beautiful, wonderful world in new ways and finding out new ways to interact with it. So I'll stop myself there, but it's very excellent.
Outstanding. You can hear more about Josh's thoughts, intimate thoughts on love, in our issue number 202. It'll be reviewed in there. Dan Stapleton, tell me what you've been playing.
I've been feeling a strong urge to jump back into XCOM. I've actually been jumping around a lot into a bunch of different games. Oh, I see what I'm going to be playing tonight, which is Sam and Max Season 3, The Penal Zone.
Hello.
Yeah, it was just released on Steam. I saw the demo for that at GDC and it just looks hilarious, so gonna have to try that. What else have I been playing? Not too much else. I've been on a Hulu binge lately, so haven't actually been playing too much, just watching.
Strange. I don't understand this watching, this non-interactivity. All right, Andy Bauman, how about yourself?
I've been in the apocalypse in Metro 2033, and I think that game is awesome. I'm really stoked about it so far. I don't think I'm too far in, and I was sort of telling you guys pre-show that I'm stuck at this one part. I'm having to replay it over and over, but it isn't causing me that much of a frustration because it's kind of fun to plot my way around stealthily. And but I'm running into problems where I bought this gun and it's really rad, I think. And maybe this won't click with certain type of gamers. And honestly, I didn't think it would click with me, especially after playing Mass Effect 2, where, you know, the experience is more or less streamlined. But like in this game, you have to like pump your weapon up. It's like a sniper rifle that's pneumatic, so you pump it up and stuff. And I thought that's kind of cool.
Like a super soaker.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of elements in that game that are similar. So you have a battery pack. And you have to charge it up by just, you know, pulling it out and then pumping it up, and it runs your night vision and your lamp and stuff like that. It's like, you don't really think about that kind of stuff in a AAA title. You'd be like, that's just kind of getting in the way of the game. But I don't know. It's kind of appealing in a way. I don't know exactly why, but anyway, I bought the wrong ammo because it wasn't clear which ammo I needed for that gun. So I ended up with like wasting all my money, which is also ammo. In a way.
Oh yeah. Was it the pellets or the like,
yeah,
the arrows?
I needed the pellets and I thought it was the arrows, and so I bought a ton of the arrows when I needed the pellets. Anyways,
I guess they're technically ball bearings. I don't know. I can't remember.
I don't know. But it's not clear what ammo it needed, and I thought that was an issue. So yeah. Be wary, always try and figure out what ammo you need before you buy it. And then yeah, it's really fun. I think there's something really satisfying about lurking around a level with where you could die really quickly at any time. And having these like one or two shot pot shot firefights with enemies, the AI just sort of takes cover. It doesn't necessarily try and outflank you, which would make it a lot harder. Maybe it does that on the harder difficulty, on the hardcore difficulty. But I found that you can kind of move your way through the environment, taking one or two quick shots at an environment. It reminded me of some of the firefights in Stalker a lot. I mean, obviously because it's made by, you know, similar people. So
yeah,
I think it's great though.
That's great. I just love the ammo as is your currency mechanic in general. It's like you stumble into those difficult firefights, and you know you're looking at like eight monsters in front of you that are like these giant mutated rats, and you know, there's some guys with shotguns elsewhere, and you're like, this is going to be expensive.
Yeah, I tend to not use the high quality ammo at all. Like I just keep it for the money. I did find it incongruent. The shotgun seems to be really underpowered. I don't know if that's just me feeling that way, because I would wait for those big monster rat things to come close, and then would unload on them with the shotgun, but it didn't seem nearly as effective as just getting a few really good shots with the AK-47. So I don't know. That felt wrong in certain aspects.
I do like the look of the shotgun. It's like a revolver, and you can put a bayonet on it later on.
Oh, dude, the guns look awesome. They're all like really homemade looking, you know?
Yeah, very well animated. Yeah. Cool. All right, Mr. Shots, Andy. What have you been playing this week?
Actually, the StarCraft 2 beta, and I'm a total grandma. I'm like an all mouse player, and I'm just barely like eking my way onto the keyboard. And you know, like attack moves for me is a fairly new thing. I sort of lost interest in real time strategy games after the original Red Alert, just because I'm not a good micro player, and I don't really enjoy the micro stuff very much. But you know, I really love real-time strategy games, and I wish they were a little less complicated. But the thing that's actually gotten me back into StarCraft II is that their matchmaking is so good that it matches me against other grandmas out there. So I probably played all your grandmas. And it actually makes me feel good at the game, which is, a fantastic thing. When I went to college, I ended up getting my butt kicked in real time. I used to think I was really good. And then I went to college and ended up getting my butt kicked. Everyone was better than me. And I kind of just lost interest because of all that micro stuff. But with the matchmaking being so good, I've really got my interest again. And I'm getting better now because of it, because I'm actually winning and getting positive reinforcement. I'm a Terran turtler.
So matchmaking has been working for you? Have you been playing in twos or just solo?
Just solo. I've been playing solo, and honestly, for like a week, I was ranked either last or next to last in my bronze league, which is honestly like I'm like a paraplegic retard, at StarCraft. But once I played for a few days, I started to come up. I'm actually up at like rank 30th in my bronze league now. So it's nice. But all of my games are really quite even. They're all pretty harrowing, you know, and they generally last, you know, a pretty standard amount of time. And I don't just get, you know, killed by a rush every time, which is kind of how it was with the old stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Cause it kind of seems, I think matchmaking is broken. With 2v2, because I've been playing with my brother a lot, and I haven't been able to get him one. Man, we've been doing custom games, and I think I lost like 10 games in a row last night within 3 minutes each time.
Custom games, you're going to get your ass kicked every time, because those are the people that aren't even using the matchmaking.
Those are the people that come harass me with like little SCVs at like the 20-second mark.
Well, yeah, you get used to that. That's an established tactic, and that's scouting. Everybody should scout.
I don't know. StarCraft might just not be the RTS for me. It's just, you have to harass and be a rusher to win that game, and those are like my two least strong points.
I'm gonna give you
any RTS though. Harassing is kind of essential, because if you're not harassing, then the other guy is just doing whatever he wants. He's got free reign. He can maximize every single resource, and unless you're distracting him to, you know, take his attention away from that.
But yeah, like taking an SCV and running it in between your crystal gatherers to screw up their pathfinding,
stupid. I think that the RTS genre in general is absolutely primed for a renaissance, and you know, there's no reason you couldn't make a really good RTS on the consoles, and I plan to be the first to do it. But all of the designs in the RTS genre, I think, have become pretty inbred. But at the same time, you know, StarCraft 2 is really good. It's a lot of fun. I'm enjoying it. But I do think that they should be reborn as something simpler, and like Kohan. I loved Kohan. Cause it was much simpler. And it felt much more about strategy rather than micro. So.
Good stuff. And Josh, I guess I'd say to you, as I do to anybody that's having trouble with a multiplayer game and is limiting their experience, play with friends.
Yeah.
Even if they're better than you, you'll have a better context.
To be honest, I actually disagree. I'm having a better time in the ranked matches than I do with friends. When I play with friends, I get my ass kicked. And then I play the ranked matches and it feels even, and it makes me feel good, and it like makes me like walk around for the rest of the day with like my head held high and like my dick hanging out. That kind of
thing. You just need different friends.
That's true. I actually need friends. That's the problem. I don't have any friends. It's probably because my dick is always hanging out.
We've seen the connection. Terrific. As for myself, I've been playing still more Mountain Blades, sort of procedurally. I think I mentioned this last podcast, or maybe it was in the office. I play games more when they boot up quickly and they shut down quickly. Like it's strange, but it just makes it so easy to get in, get out. I was watching hockey last night and playing it between periods, recruiting more people into my mobile team of adventurers. I've also been playing a bunch of Lead and Gold for review, and I think Lead and Gold is definitely worth a look. It's a game that if you're looking for a shooter that sort of for the same reason I mentioned for Mountain Blade, that you can pick up and put down easily. You know, it's got six maps, it's got four character classes, it's multiplayer only, it's Western themed, it's pretty simplified mechanics. But if there's room in your life for a shooter that is, you know, a little bit easier to jump into than Battlefield Bad Company 2, it's definitely worth taking a look at. I think once it drops down to like $8 or $10, it's an easy pickup without suggestion, though.
Well, I just want to add to the end of that that the XCOM clone I was talking about that was close but not quite, it was called UFO Extraterrestrials, not Invasion. I think UFO Invasion is actually a free one, a community based project that is like really rough. But I was just looking up their website, and you can get them on Steam, by the way, UFO Extraterrestrials. I was looking up the website here, and they've got a sequel in the works.
Really?
Yeah, it's supposed to be, it's due out this week, this year. So hopefully they will get a few more things right.
And what's that sequel called then?
UFO 2 Extraterrestrials, Shadows Over Earth.
Oh my gosh. It really bugs me when they just like, I mean, there's literally like a slot machine exists in which names are generated, and then maybe they use a thesaurus or something. Like, that's so painful. UFO 2. Okay. Well, thanks for joining us this week, and special thanks to Andy Schatz, which, hey, stick around. We're going to interview him here and talk about Monaco and talk about the independent gaming scene in general. So look forward to some of that. And thanks to my colleagues, Andy Bauman, Josh Augustine, Dan Stapleton. And Logan says he voted for Monaco in the IGF competition. You wanted me to mention that, Andy. So
thanks, Logan.
Cheers.
Appreciate
to
it.
Cheers.
I owe you $22,500.
Outstanding. All right. Thanks for joining us this week, guys. Send us your questions. Send us your comments on our page. Visit our Facebook page. Visit us on Twitter. And we'll talk to you soon. Take care. Have a good weekend. All right, so as a special edition of the PC Gamer podcast today, we have Andy Schatz. Andy Schatz is a developer for Pocket Watch Games. The developers are one of our favorite independent games in development right now. It's called Monaco. It won the most prestigious award at the Independent Games Festival at GDC this year. Andy Schatz, great to have you on. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. I'm glad to be here.
Of course. We have a nice little Monaco preview going into our issue, heading out to people right now. And I think like just the way we've been describing the game around the office, it's such a challenge to describe, and it's fun to find new ways of articulating it. But we sort of describe Monaco as being a combination of Pac-Man, Hitman, and Ocean's 11. What's your pitch to, on Monaco in that way, Andy?
Yeah, well, that's you pretty much hit it dead on. I usually say Pac-Man and Hitman are the two, or Gauntlet is another good one to describe it. It's a top-down stealth game with cooperative gameplay, so you can play it with 1 to 4 players. And it's all viewed from a top-down perspective, like say Gauntlet. You're basically trying to get in and steal as much stuff, plus whatever the goal item is, in various different prestigious locations around the country of Monaco in Monte Carlo, and then get out alive without being noticed. So that's the basic pitch. Each of the characters you can play has different special abilities. So you know, you might be going in with a team of a locksmith and a hacker and the cleaner or something along those lines. And you're all using your unique skills in order to help each other, you know, stay hidden and get as much stuff as you can.
Great. So again, like within the context of, you know, those classic heist movies where every character is sort of their own utility, right? Every character has a specific function within the heist. That's sort of what you're talking about. The locksmith can open doors more quickly. The cleaner can, if he sneaks up behind enemies, he can sort of chloroform them and disable them for a few moments. Am I remembering that correctly?
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. There's 4 primary characters that you start out with and then a bunch of unlockable characters. So the locksmith, and of course they're all, the game's still in development. In fact, it won the IGF award only after only like 14 weeks of development. And I still have quite a long ways to go, over a year left. So the characters are all still a little bit in flux. But the basic 4 characters are the locksmith and the hacker and the prowler and the cleaner. And each character has some sort of passive special ability, and then they also have 1 active special ability that you can use, you have limited uses on. So the locksmith's passive ability is that he can open locked doors and safes really quickly, whereas the hacker actually has 2 passive special abilities. One is that he's got thermal vision and he can see through walls, and the second is that he disables electronics like alarm systems much more quickly than anyone else. And his special ability that has limited uses on it, he can drop spy cameras to see large areas of the map, and basically do surveillance.
Terrific. Yeah. So a lot of the fun we had here at the office when we were playing Monaco, we put it on our big 30-inch monitor. We all just kind of gathered around it, all 4 of us. And that, you know, that's kind of a unique experience on PC. You're not often at the same computer with a few other players. And I'm curious what kind of feedback you got from the judges at IGF, positive and negative even. I mean, you say it's still a year off. What reason did they give you for the award you received?
I think that the primary thing is just everyone had a blast with it. It is a very social game, although it's still really fun as a single player game. You also can play the game over the internet, so you can play, you know, a single person per computer. And it changes the game a little bit because when you're playing online, you only see what your character sees. Whereas when you're playing all together, you can see all the areas that all the characters can see. And there's sort of a line of sight mechanic in the game in that, areas that your character can directly see, with line of sight show up in full color and animated. And the areas where you've explored, but you can't actively see at the current moment, draw as blueprints. So you're sort of walking around this map where the blueprint areas are turning into the full color sort of lifelike version of the world. So at any rate, back to your question. It's a freaking fun game to play. When I was demoing it at Game Developers Conference in March, you know, there's a giant crowd standing there, and whoever was playing, the four people who were playing, they were ending up, you know, high-fiving each other and cheering, and, you know, they get to the escape van just barely with the guards hot on their trail, and it's a tense, fun experience. The design itself is an amalgam of a number of other game design concepts that exist, but it just hasn't been done in this particular way before.
I mean, obviously, two-dimensional, like, retro-feeling games are nothing new to independent development. They're easier to create. They're lightweight. They often run on open source engines that, you know, don't cost a lot to get the rights to. But I love the way Monaco abstracts so many things within its world. The voice clips you use of I think some of the guards within the game that you're trying to sort of stealth around, they speak like French sometimes. Uh-huh. The quality of the audio in general, like the opening and closing of doors, it seems like you're using a lot of real world audio at this point. I'm curious if you're going to continue to keep that within the game as it develops further, and why you selected that over purely retro, like 8-bit soundtracks and things like that.
Sure. Yeah. Well, a big part of it is that I haven't spent a dime yet on sound stuff. And I thought that the idea of the atmosphere, of the game, I think since the game is from a top-down perspective, it makes it a little harder to make it feel like you are there. So I think if the sound effects were really sort of old school 8-bit, I think it would create more of a perception that you're not in the game. Whereas using the real sound, using, you know, realistic sound effects sort of gives you a little bit more immersion of being in the world. And there's a lot of sound effects being layered on top of one another. I actually pulled almost all the sound effects from a site called freesound.org, which is basically just attribution only rights. And the music is from a composer named Kevin McLeod that all of his stuff is attribution only. And then the voiceover work, I actually just have a couple of French Canadian friends that I invited over for pizza, and I had them record the guard, voiceovers in French. Just layering all that stuff on top of one another really creates a really sort of great sense of atmosphere and a great sense of immersion, despite the fact that it's shown from a top down, you know, Pac-Man-esque perspective. You know, sound in stealth games really rely on sound a lot, because you might be hiding in a closet. You can't see outside, but you want to be able to hear the footsteps walking past. And as those footsteps fade into the distance, you know the coast is clear. So you might jump out of that closet and go the other way from the footsteps. So sound is definitely a really important thing. It's definitely one of the things that a lot of people have really enjoyed about the game so far. And it's been fun for me to do, because I don't have any, you know, sound or music background at all. I'm a programmer and artist. So it's just been fun for me to sort of grab all these bits and pieces and mash them up into the game and, you know, basically sort of enhance the interactivity of the game through the sound.
Yeah, I mean, I just love to hear about independent game development and just kind of like inviting two of your buddies over to have pizza and kind of record some stuff and just get them in the game. Is that kind of how you're coming up with new ideas for these characters too? Like, as you're playing maybe with your buddy or something, they'll be like, man, I really wish I could do this right now. And you're like, oh, that's a great idea. Maybe I'll add that as like an extra character.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, it's awesome. I've got a Facebook page for the development. It's facebook.com/MonacoIsMine. I've been getting ideas on there as well. There's so much heist material out there in terms of, movies and books and even real world heists. One of the amazing things about real world heists is they are actually as complicated as they are in the movies. Like it's amazing that the lengths that people will go to steal things. People are constantly, you know, feeding me stories and movies and things like that to watch and coming up with ideas from their favorite movies and saying, oh, you got to be able to do this or that. And like, there's a famous, jewel thief, the American jewel thief that was just caught like 4 years ago or something like that. And he kept robbing banks in the U.S. just by climbing through their air ducts. And, you know, that might be an obvious thing, but it the other day someone passed me this story and I was like, oh, I don't have air ducts in the game. I really ought to have air ducts. So I added in air ducts into the game and, you know, added in the prowler's, special ability that she can climb up into the air ducts quickly to escape from guards. So yeah, it's cool working on something where there's so much good source material out there. Probably just because, you know, my game design philosophy has always been to take, something that actually exists and draw game design inspiration from the sort of the systems that actually exist rather than trying to create mechanics on their own. And by that I mean, like, you know, the games I've done in the past, I build ecosystem games. And so rather than trying to take elements of sim games and make a sim game about animals, what I tried to do is I tried to take ecosystems and build a game around the sort of mechanics that drive an ecosystem. And it's the same thing here. Rather than sort of taking existing game design concepts, what I've been trying to do is take, the idea of heist movies or heists in general and build the mechanics around the stuff that exists within that. It's a little bit more of like this is going to sound snotty to say, but it's a little bit more like how Michelangelo is believed that he was that the forms within his sculptures already existed within the stone, and it was just up to him to remove the bits of remove the excess stone to reveal the sculpture inside it, rather than like Leonardo da Vinci believed, who was just a generation before Michelangelo, da Vinci believed that he was acting more as like the hand of God, where he was actually creating things with the grace of God, and God was giving him the ability to create things, whereas Michelangelo was just sort of thinking that he was revealing sort of the beauty of the existing world just by chipping away the stone. And that's how I approach my game design.
No, I think we totally relate to that, actually. Like, we see a tree and, you know, we sort of take our axe to it and it becomes a magazine about games. So I definitely get that. So, I mean, from our perspective, you know, we see a lot of independent games. We review a lot of independent games. And I really like to get your hard thoughts on this, your honest thoughts about this. Or at least it's very tempting to say that the independent gaming scene right now is in renaissance, in the sense that there's a lot of tools out there for people to get their hands on that are free and accessible. You're talking about, you know, tracking down assets and things like that. And probably more importantly, there are avenues for financial success, probably mainly Xbox Live Arcade and PlayStation Network. And, you know, obviously the PC has always been a fundamental driving force for independent development, but there are now commercial avenues in place. You know, obviously getting a publisher is always going to be difficult for games like Braid and Space Giraffe and other games along those lines to get themselves out there and expose themselves to millions of more users. And I'm curious if you think that represents something significant for the independent community.
Yeah, I do. If you look back at sort of the short-term history of how this has happened, just 5 years ago, the independent game scene, the majority of it really revolved around the casual gaming world, with Big Fish Games and Real Arcade and those types of places. And those were sort of the footholds. Those are the places that established the idea of digital distribution, and made it so that people were comfortable downloading games. They also changed the pricing model, away from the $40 games. And at the time, just 5 years ago, all the indie games and casual games were selling for $20 a piece. And that's the casual game industry drove the prices down and then Xbox Live Arcade, continued to help drive those prices down. And I don't think that's actually a bad thing, because it's exposing a lot more people to gaming than used to be exposed to it. But the casual gaming scene is sort of, that ship has sailed. But behind it left a bunch of things behind that have really been to the benefit of the indie gaming scene. And like you mentioned, the marketplace exists, the market exists. So the people are willing to buy digitally distributed games, especially short form games. And now that the tools exist as well, largely those tools were promoted and created, from that casual gaming scene. Now it's a fantastic time to be an independent developer. I'm hoping actually that we're going to be seeing games that are way better than even the ones that we're seeing today. I love World of Goo and Braid, and there's a lot of people love those two games. But they really do stand out pretty well above the pack of even the best ones that are coming out, now and over the past year and a half. I'm looking forward to the time when we're seeing quite a few of that sort of caliber of game per year. And I think that's coming real soon, as it's likely to be there in the next couple of years. With the one caveat that since a lot of games are moving towards the free model, and that sort of restricts our ability to put in the type of effort that was put into with those two games. Mm-hmm. So you look at a game like Six V's, which is a fantastic game. But you kind of wonder, I don't want to say anything bad about it, because it's actually a perfect little gem of a game.
Yeah.
But it's definitely sort of at a lower quality bar, I would say. I don't want to say quality, but production quality bar than like a Braid or a World of Goo. But you do kind of wonder what would happen if, you know, he was able to take that game and spend a lot more time on it, though I don't think he would have wanted to. But you know, you get my drift that those year and a half long games, you know, I think that there's a great potential for there to be a lot more of them. And the only danger right now is the move towards the free to play model.
Yeah, absolutely. The letter V six times, I'm using that sort of figuratively, but definitely one of those games that embraces, the recent admiration and affection for retro gaming, full bore, with the soundtrack and everything else and the visuals. We like that a lot. So along those lines, what indie games should we be playing now and looking forward to right now?
I'm kind of looking forward to, you know, beyond what I already know of right now. the ones that I would recommend that you can play right now, 6Vs is definitely one of them. Steambirds I thought was fantastic, which I know came out a little while ago, but, you know, I only discovered it recently and it's really worth playing. It's a top down, strategy game about, biplanes, basically an alternate history on, dogfighting, with World War I and World War II style fantasy planes. And it's a flash game. I believe he's working on maybe a bigger version of it. Well, those are the two I'd really recommend right now. You know, I love playing lots of little games. A lot of the time I do wish some of these shorter form games would be made into bigger games, but I also understand the limitations. And also a lot of the time indie game developers just want to make little games. They don't want to put in the, you know, year or 2 years to make a you know, really fleshed out experience. They just want to write a poem, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. So yeah, I guess those are the two I'd take a look at.
Terrific. I really like what you're saying there about in terms of writing a poem. There's value in that form, that size of game, absolutely. And it's great to remind people and get people excited about what people are doing within that size and that space of a game. So other than Air Ducks, I'm really curious. I know you've got, you know, a few more characters coming for Monaco, based on the last build we played, but are there any big features or little features or interesting features, that we can look forward to or start thinking about?
Considering that your viewers probably don't know anything about the game in the first place, you can look forward to every feature in the game because it's freaking awesome. But yeah, I'll tell you some of the unlockable characters. There's the redhead whose, special ability is her sexy walk. Cause she's damn fine.
Terrific. And, even though she's about 12 pixels, right?
Yeah, exactly. But she basically serves as a distraction. There's the gentleman, who is a master of disguise and social situations. There's the rat, and the rat's special ability, is that when the guards go to start shooting at him, he can rat out his teammates and tell the guards where all his teammates are so they can go chase after them, chase after his teammates instead of him. There's Boom Boom, who is a demolitions expert, and he can actually blow up walls, and all of the world is destructible, completely destructible. So, he'll be able to actually create passages where none existed. There's all sorts of other awesome stuff that I'm adding every day. It takes me, like, honestly, a day to add a feature. So anytime I come up with something good, I just throw it in there. And part of the game is, you know, the game is incredibly simple to play. All you need is, you know, on the PC, it's just the arrow keys and the space bar. The space bar is for using your special item. And if you want to interact with objects in the world, you just kind of push against them. So if you want to unlock a locked door, you just push against it until you've picked the lock. So it's super simple to play, and what I'm trying to do is add in as many features as I possibly can without destroying that elegance of the controls.
Is there a particular one that you like to play just kind of a personal player basis? I promise I won't complain that you are nerfing the other ones intentionally.
Well, they're all constantly changing. I actually, the build of the game you played had, the cleaner, you had to sneak up behind an unsuspecting guard in order to knock him out. While I liked that, it was really difficult to explain to the player, and I'm trying to make the game basically playable without a tutorial. So I actually moved his chloroform onto his special ability, which you use with the space bar, and you can do it even when they do see you. Yeah, I love playing the cleaner because it's really fun to knock guards out. especially the cleaner is a really good support character when you're playing with other people, because, you know, maybe, you know, a guard sees the locksmith and the cleaner just stands inside the door and knocks the guard out as he comes through the door, that sort of thing. So he's really fun to play. I like the hacker too, just because the hacker is a surveillance expert and he can really sort of help direct the team move through the level. So those are my favorites.
Thanks again for joining us on the PC Gamer podcast, Andy. Why don't you tell us, for anybody that's interested in Monaco and following its development, where they can find you?
Sure. Yeah, you can follow development. Well, there's links to the Facebook page and the Twitter page at monacoismine.com. Go check it out. I actively update the Facebook and the Twitter with whatever I happen to be working on that day. I'll see you over there. Thanks a lot, guys.
Terrific. Yeah, thanks for joining us. And we also wanted to thank, on your behalf, Kevin McLeod. Is that the way you pronounce it? I'm sorry. Great. Yeah. The fine gentleman you borrowed the music for Monaco for, that we're interspersing with this podcast. You probably already heard a little bit of it. And it's a very charming addition to the game. And thanks again, Andy. And we'll be talking to you soon. Looking forward to more about Monaco.
Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Is it Eric or Logan in?
Logan, I don't think so. Hey, Eric? Are you available? Okay. Let's call Eric in.
I mean, we didn't have to have him if you didn't want him.
It's okay. No. He's busy on special assignments, so. Are you a bad enough dude to play this question, Andy?
This question is so indie, it doesn't even want to be played.
Question better be made out of stars.
You guys have to pay me $25 if you want to hear this question.
Yeah, I'll do it. Anything.
Is it worth it?
Prestige.
Line up. Get in line. All right.
Hey, are you shouldn't have hung up.
Yeah, we were like, well, he didn't have to hang up. For real.
Yeah, sorry. No, it was like real.
I needed closure.
Yeah.
I understand. Oh, cool. That's fun, though. Thanks, Andy.
Yeah, no.
And so now we're going to do
funnier.
What's that? Sorry.
I wish I could have been funnier. Want to do the whole thing over again?
Yes. You'll have plenty more opportunities to be funny on the podcast.